I just want to do God's will.
The kind of revolution that the world needs is a Christian revolution.
If you want a miracle, you've got to expect it to happen.
You're the recipients of God's grace and God's blessings, and you rejoice in that reality.
Welcome to Life Today Live. Randy Robinson here, live today. And before we get into the craziness you're about to hear, and also the good news you're about to hear, I want to thank a couple of people because I've been gone for most of the last 2 weeks. Jeremy last week got the call of, hey, man, there's bad weather. My flight's delayed. Can you fill in for me? And he did a great job with Zorro last Wednesday. Thursday and Friday were pre-recorded with the movie release with Joel Smallbone. I had pre-recorded that one. And then Jordan, Jordy B, as I call her, filled in and did a wonderful job. And she's just doing so great. So I wanted to thank people that have supported me. If you were chatting and I was not responding, I apologize. That's because a lot of it was pre-recorded. But today we are back. I will say, last week I had an epic time, a wonderful trip. My last snow skiing trip of the season. April is always a fabulous month. A little hit and miss on the weather. But I actually skied in three different states last week, and it was a lot of fun. A little too much driving. I don't know if I'd do that again. Also saw Nate Bargatze, comedian. I highly recommend him. Hilarious, live, absolutely worth it. And I spent a lot of time with a good friend of mine, lifelong friend of mine, who is in the Christian media sort of space. So we talk a lot of business. But more importantly, he's a guy that I really just don't have any secrets with him, you know. I can talk to him about just about anything, and he has really given me some life-saving guidance over the years, kept me from self-destructing. And I say that because we all need men. We especially need other men in our lives. I can talk to my wife about anything, but there's a difference between my wife and godly friends, and we need them. And ladies, if your husband doesn't have any godly men, I would encourage you to push him out of the house a little bit with some guys that can be wise counsel, strength, and just good friends. And if you're looking for a great way to do that, today's guest runs an organization or group, I don't know what you call it. It's called Explorience. This is the website here. It's Explorience.org. And yeah, it's explore and experience, because he's getting people out into places like I have been. In fact, we were talking about a Utah trip that he's doing with Bob Goff coming out in the summer. And it's about getting men with men in God's presence. And if that's not a part of your life, men, or not a part of the life of the man in your life, I would check out explorance.org or look for some other opportunities to do that. We need that as men. We need that. And so I had a good time with that, and I appreciate those sitting in. Now, bit of a hard left turn here, because my guest today is Ryan George, who runs Explorance. And he has a book that just came out on Friday that's telling about some experiences that were not always good. And you'll be amazed to hear where he came from and where God has brought him and continues to bring him on his journey. The book is called Hurt and Healed by the Church. I'll just let Ryan dive into this. But suffice to say that if there's anybody who has a right to have run from the church and never looked back, it would be someone like Ryan. But thank God. Mm-hmm. That's not the case. Ryan, great to see you. Man. Welcome back to Life Today Live.
Yeah, it's good to be here. Good to see you again.
So where do you even start with this? I mean, you tell me, because this, what you've seen, what you've been through, where you've come from is, it's wild.
Yeah, I mean, if you want a shorthand, last year a documentary came out called Shiny Happy People. Mm-hmm. That's the religious system I grew up in. And that religious system incentivizes narcissists, abusers, whatever, because there's no accountability in that system of faith. And some of the theology is bent towards high control, which also lends itself towards abuse. And so I was physically, verbally, and spiritually abused. So for instance, like if I did something wrong and my dad beat me or did something worse than beat me, which often happened, he would say, yeah, but in the Old Testament, it said that if you disrespected your parents, you should be stoned publicly, but killed for it. So this is less than that. So be thankful, right? So that's what I endured. And then several years ago, we found out through a podcast, actually a victims advocate podcast, that my dad was a serial sexual predator. We don't know the full extent, how many victims there are, the full extent of his actions. The ones we do know and their stories are just utterly despicable. And I'll share that. I mean, you can go to my book for that. It's not a true crime book. It's not there to litigate. I'm not trying to get a pound of flesh on my dad or anything, but just to give people the backstory to say, hey, I get church hurt. I get all the excuses you could have for why you'd want to walk away from church. And a lot of my friends have. Yeah. Even some of my family members have considered it. And to go, I get it. And I'm not minimizing that. I'm not whitewashing it. I'm not trying to get you to put any of your questions or pain aside. I'm just saying there is a path to finding healing in the church. One of the things my counselor says on a regular basis is wounds from relationship are healed in relationship. Mm-hmm. And what I'm finding, although no one's actually said these exact words to me, is that the wounds that I've gotten from church are being healed in a safe faith community. Now, I might define church differently than how it was defined for me growing up and how a lot of people who are listening and watching today might define it. But yeah, I'm finding healing in the church, not to save the church, but to save my soul.
Mm. Oh, wow. Okay. We're going to circle back to that. But okay, so just to back up a little bit. So your father was the pastor of an independent fundamental Baptist church. Is that what it was?
Several. But yeah, for most of my childhood, it was one in Maryland. Yes.
What did that look like? I mean, was it just a church that was a little, kind of had a little hard edge to it, or was it really more deep cult like kind of thing? How closed off was it?
I guess it depends on the Sunday, right? Like there were days that we looked more normal. Like you could have walked in maybe on an Easter and it looked more normal. Where it got really off was when I went home, right? There was a certain presence that my dad had to his congregation that actually attracted abusers into his sphere, right? He's almost like a spider with a web because he was very gregarious and there was a lot to like about our church. There were people from different socioeconomic statuses. There were things we were doing to serve. There were things that if you looked at it from the outside, you're like, oh, well, it's just a little bit more conservative than what we believe. Yeah. But when you dig down underneath it and look at the foundational beliefs, they check a lot of the boxes for a cult. Definitely, there's a very popular term right now in counseling called high control religion, where one person has the say over a lot of people. And it's not exclusive to the Baptist faith. It's not exclusive to Mormons or Mennonites or whatever. Yeah. It can be anywhere. Taken all the way to its nth, it becomes a compound, a David Koresh type situation. And I would say we were probably 60% to David Koresh. You know, we weren't wearing matching sneakers or drinking Kool-Aid or anything like that. But there was this, it was a groupthink situation where if you didn't agree with us, there's the door.
Mm. Okay. So at what point did you realize this was off? Was it not till adulthood or did you rebel in your teen years?
There were parts of it that I argued while I was in it, right? That was the problem. You know, my dad, people have asked me, like, when did abuse start in your family? I say, my abuse didn't start till I started asking questions and pushing back. When I turned 13, I was taller than my dad. And I think maybe some of that had to do with it, but pushing back on some of the things we believed, some of the practices we had. But I went to a college in the same belief system, you know, a very cult-like college. I don't think it really started to shake out until I moved to Virginia. I live in the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia now. And my wife did not grow up in that. So I married outside of the cult, which wasn't, my parents weren't happy with that, obviously. And we started attending a church where people thought that what I grew up in was weird. So I'd be telling a story and a friend, their mouth would just drop like, wait, back up. What? You weren't allowed to walk on the same sidewalk as a girl? Like stuff like that, you know? And you go, oh, I just thought I was a Bible nerd. I just thought I was a little bit more conservative than other people. And they're like, wait a second, your dad hung you? Like that's a thing for discipline? I was like, yeah, I mean, I was mouthing off and he wanted to silence me. So he choked me and held me off the ground while my feet dangled till I, you know, Like, that's not normal, you know? And so part of that, and so I submitted myself to different classes and audiobooks and going to conferences, hearing how other churches did. I got really fascinated in my mid 20s, late 20s of like, so what I grew up in isn't normal. And thankfully I was surrounded by people who had just this winsome relationship with a Jesus. You know, you look at the New Testament Jesus and everybody from every end of every perspective, old and young, religious and non-religious, you know, Jew and Greek, man and woman, old and young, everybody was fascinated by this guy. There was an attraction to him that we're told wasn't physical, right? There was just something about him that was different and winsome and attractive. And so that's the Jesus I eventually found.
At what point did the word abuse enter your conversation when talking about your childhood? Like, when did you realize that's what it was?
Well, psychologists will tell you that your body knows in the instant, right? Like, I knew something was wrong. I used to run away from home on a regular basis, right? And I intentionally went to a college 1,000 miles away. Like, my parents never visited me in college, right? It's like, I was safe there. But being free to call it abuse, I bet you I was probably 35 years old before I was willing to call it abusive.
Jeez.
Yeah. Jeez. And I didn't get into therapy until I was 40, 41. It was a year, thankfully the timing worked out. It was several months before our daughter came into our lives. We have a teenage daughter that came into our life in 2015 or 2019. And as I'm trying to be her dad, I'm like, oh, wait a second. I would never say that to my kid. I would never do that to my kid. In fact, the last time my mom was in my house, I think it was the last time she was here, my daughter and I are chirping back and forth, nothing mean or disrespectful, just, you know, busting each other's chops. And mom's like, you let your kid talk to you like that? I was like, yeah, my kid loves me. Like, this is a good time right now. Like, she's calling me out on something I said yesterday, and she's right to call me. It's inconsistent. Yesterday I said I like this, and today I was picking on it or whatever. And so a lot of it was becoming a dad, which I had fought against, because abuse is multi-generation in my family. My grandfather was beaten by chains. One of my ancestors had a book written about him being the meanest man in America or some sort of phrase like that. My dad was heavily abused. No surprise, right? It runs downhill. I was physically abusive with my sisters in high school until I say, I don't want to be this, but I was so scared I would become my dad that I had all three versions of a vasectomy to make sure I wouldn't make a baby. Jeez. And I wasn't pursuing being a father. I wasn't trying to adopt or foster. I was on a helicopter expedition up in Canada. I get back to civilization. My wife texts me. She's like, hey, there's a young lady that's been put in our protective care. And we just kept saying yes and yes and yes until eventually we pursued adoption and then she became our daughter. And so I wasn't even trying to be a dad. The one redemptive thing that Jesus had used most in my life to heal from my own abuse was the thing that I was running from.
Yeah. You know, wow. I mean, that's really cool, because you are learning not just how to be a decent dad yourself, the goal of all of us, but you're learning what is real hard for people who have been in abusive situations, especially spiritually abusive, any kind of abuse. I mean, and that is the idea of a heavenly father, and father can be a real negative term, mm-hmm. who is good. Mm-hmm. And I think we learn that a lot of times when we have our own children. How have you gotten past the bad father that you grew up with, and the heavenly father that you're supposed to think of as someone you want to have a relationship with?
Well, that answer is two part. One is, I'm glad God's not like me either. Like, I'm a better dad, I think. My wife and my daughter tell me I'm a better dad than I had. But I still wouldn't want me being God, right? Like, I'm still too little vindictive and a little insecure. And mm-hmm. there's a bunch of things in me that aren't healed yet. But the other is, Jesus said, if you've seen me, you've seen my dad, right? Or he said my father, whatever, however you want to do it. But it's like, I can't, if I'm going to fall in love with this Jesus guy as much as I have, I have to go, oh, he's just like his dad. Mm-hmm. there's an interest, and I've lost her name, but there's a counselor out there right now, a biblical counselor, who says you can tell which part of someone's family was wounded by who they pray to when they pray, whether they pray to the Spirit, to Jesus, or the Father. And I realized after listening to that presentation that I always prayed to Jesus. Mm-hmm. I didn't talk. And I can tell you where I was. I can tell you what mountain it was. I think I can even tell you what trail I was on when I was finally comfortable was listening to Good, Good Father by Chris Tomlin. And I just broke down crying, talking to God. I went, hey, God, I'm going to talk to the dad part right now. Like, I don't even know how the Trinity works. Like, I'm still trying to wrap my brain around that.
Sure.
But I've talked to Jesus a lot today. I want to, and I'm just bawling. And I'm like, thanks for being a good dad when my biological dad wasn't. And that was one of the other things that I started to learn is to say biological dad. I know it sounds really weird, but what I've realized is since I've left home, I don't have a relationship with my father anymore. He created some boundaries for us that was pretty easy to follow. And I have found that Jesus has brought, or God the Father, whoever, you know, the Spirit has brought men into my life in different parts of what people look for in a father. Mm-hmm. And it's not all one person, right? I get certain things from certain men, and I've got, you know, I've got those father roles influencing me and go, oh, God, the Father is good because he's trying to represent the best part of him through men in my life who are acting in fatherly ways.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's huge. It goes back to a little bit of what I was saying at the beginning, because we all need that even as men, regardless of how old we are, you know?
Right.
So you mentioned, you know, you don't, your father is still alive now. Is he ever, you talk about learning about some of the abuse from a podcast and a victim's podcast. I mean, is that still an open-ended thing right there, or is there something going to happen?
It's still a mystery, right? Because of statute of limitations, he's cut loose of some of the consequences that he deserves. Yeah. I've worked with one of the victim's attorneys. Yeah, I was like, hey, I'll help any way I can. I want justice to happen. I've been interviewed by law enforcement. And I've told them everything I know. I was like, the problem is a lot of the situations that happened, I was nowhere near. I lived in a different state. You know, I'm significantly older than my siblings, and the victims were my siblings' friends. So like the ones that I know about are much, much younger than me, but we have some context clues of different things my dad has said. We started recording conversations with him in 2012 when we had some suspicions of other things going on in his life. And now going back and listening to him, we're going, oh, maybe the reason we moved here at the moment we did was because we were getting away from consequences. One of the churches, my dad was a Christian school teacher and assistant pastor, and they just paid my dad for like a year, year and a half to go away and get a church plant started in another state. And the circumstances around our moving were really, looking back, there's questions now. There's awkward moments in the 90s. I was doing door-to-door visitation. That's really big in the faith I grew up in. And we visited a lady's house, never met her before, don't know her name, never seen her since. Just a stranger, we're, you know, canvassing a neighborhood. And we said, hey, if you don't have a faith or don't have a church, we'd love to invite you to ours. And she said, oh, where do you go? And we told her, she said, oh, I'd never go there. The pastor's having an affair. And it's so wild because that day, my partner, like you go in pairs, you know, like a lot of the religions do. My partner was my mom. And she's like, oh, no, I'm his wife, I would know. And this stranger looked at my mom. I'll never forget this day. And she said, well, you don't know your husband.
Jeez.
And so we don't know. And my dad, one of the victims he had, he did tell us something had happened because he stepped down from a church when it happened. But he said he'd had an affair with a teenager. And we found out later it was not a affair. It was not consensual. And it started before she was 18. So maybe that affair that we heard about through a door was something else. Like we just don't know the extent of it. And as much as I would love to give all of my dad's victims a chance at justice and freedom and closure and whatever, I don't even know who some of them, maybe people see my name in this book or whatever. I had one guy message me on Facebook. He's like, hey, I went to one of your dad's churches. I've got more details if you want them. I'm supposed to get with him in the next couple of weeks. Jeez. So I don't even know the extent of it, to be honest.
So what do you do? By the way, I want to show people your book again. This is Hurt and Healed by the Church by Ryan George. Where, you know, this, like he said, this is not just like some kind of tell-all or investigative journalist kind of thing. I mean, there's a lot of right. lot going on. There's a larger thing. But what do you do with that and not letting that dictate your every thought of every day and moving on and being the man God wants you to be and not just getting stuck in that muck?
Well, part of it is forgiveness isn't, Jesus gave us the call to forgiveness, not for the other person, but for ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, how many times are you, the person you have to forgive is someone who's passed on to the other side, right? So forgiveness isn't meant just to free them. It's meant to free us. And so when I'm living in forgiveness, it's a much better life. And I want people to forgive me, right? The other part of it is I look at, hey, I can focus on the hurt, or I can focus on the redemption.
Yeah.
I can be the change I want to see in the world. I can be the first generation of George men to not abuse my spouse and abuse my children, mm-hmm. you know? And so my personality style, I tend to look for the silver linings. I tend to show me the fun thing we can do. And so, and that's where my adventure started. You mentioned exploring at the beginning of our conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been to all seven continents, both polar circles, trying to scare myself into some sort of feeling. I found God through it. So God redeemed that. But yeah, a lot of it was just running away from the pain and then going to counseling and going, no, let's sit in this. Let's process through this so that we can move on, so that I am not defined by what my dad did,
right,
to me or anybody else, that I can be defined what God's doing in me.
There you go.
And so it's hard. I will say it's not 100% of the time. There are days when I have to pray to Jesus a version of what that guy said to him. He's like, hey, God, I believe, help my lack of belief. There are days I go, God, I forgive, but help my lack of forgiveness.
Yeah.
You know, there are days when I feel myself grinding my teeth or my fists all balled up, and I have to say, hey, God, help me loosen my fingers. But yeah, it's a prison if you stay there.
Okay. Now that's important, because somebody's going to watch this interview if they're not watching now, and they're watching it because they've been through some similar things in some mm-hmm. regard, the spiritual abuse. They want a relationship with God, but they are terrified by what they've seen by people who call themselves messengers of God, right? And right, they know right. something's off. What do you say to that person who is where you were, you know, 15, 20 years ago, trying to figure things out?
So what I promise I claim all the time, and I have during my whole recovery journey, is to say, to claim Jesus' promise that if we seek him, we'll find him. To go, hey, I may never be comfortable in a church building again. And I know people who aren't, right? But can I fall in love with Jesus? Like, can I focus on that? And so what I would tell people is, you know, try to find a person of faith that is living the life that doesn't scream hypocrisy. None of us are perfect, but there's a difference between perfection and hypocrisy, right?
Yeah, right.
Or imperfection and hypocrisy. Yeah. You go, no, that person's real when they make a mistake. That person's not trying to sell me something. That person, it's the real deal. And so what happened to me is I found those people. It's kind of like if you have a favorite artist. This weekend I went to a podcast gathering, and it was all these people who are fans of the same podcast all around the country. And we were like, oh, hey, I did not know them before. But going home now, I have somebody new on Instagram to follow or what have you. And it's the same thing. When you fall in love with the real Jesus and you look around, you're like, oh, all these people who are attracted to the real Jesus,
yeah.
now you have a faith community. Yeah, and it may not be something that has services. It might be sitting around a fire. It might be going on ski trips together. It might be any number of things. I've found it taking guys on backpacking trips or motorcycle trips or whatever and go, okay, this is a faith community. Jesus said, if two or more are gathered in my name, I am there. And so whether you not you call that church, I call that church.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, the first century church was all in houses anyway. So, I mean, you
right.
know, let's not get
I talked to
on
one pastor party. Out in California, and they have a motocross ministry. And he said, yeah, last Sunday, none of us were here at this building because there was 120 of us out in the desert singing and praying together. We did a little homily, and then we rode all day in the desert. To me, that's church, right? Like,
yeah.
And we do life together. There's a church out in, I think it's Montana, that doesn't even have Sunday services. They do service on Thursday night. They're like, listen, if we're trying to reach the world's doing a bunch of fun things on Sunday. Go do that with them and be Jesus there, whether they are believers or not, right? Show up where they are and where they're having fun. Because if you both love riding ATVs, well, you're going to already, that knocks down a door for a relationship or skiing or whatever your thing is, right?
Yeah, yeah.
For me, I love Via Ferrata and bungee and paragliding, stuff like that. And you have these rich conversations with people that, you never knew me. I've had a long, long dinner with a stranger from Israel that I've never met before, just because we were both backpacking the same like bucket list trail together, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So as you pursue the Jesus that is attracted to you, you will find other people who are attracted to that same Jesus.
I like things where I keep my feet on the ground, just for the record.
Okay.
So we'll be clear about that. But you keep going back to this idea of connecting with people. And I think, well, we know one of the hallmarks of cult activity is a bit of isolation.
Mm-hmm.
And scripturally, I think you can definitely make the case that that's one of the enemy's tactics to keep us separated from God is isolation. I know a lot of people experienced that through COVID, and they felt how damaging that was. And, you know, we do in the United States in the 21st century, we tend to congregate in buildings. And I get that. I got no problem with that. I love my church building. But if we think that's church, we have actually missed it, because it's not the bricks. It's the people. It's not, the temple is a living temple in the New Testament terms. So that here's the balance that I'd love you to speak to. Yeah, okay. So don't get hung up on the building, but don't isolate. We need fellowship with believers for our healing. Is that not the experience you've had?
For sure. And I would add too, like for me, if you have trauma in your past, and a lot of people do, I grew up in faith communities, especially people of my age, right? That 40 and older group, before the internet started shining lights on everybody, is getting a Christian counselor is also help. Like, even if that's the only community you have, that's not isolation, right? And the goal is to be expanding that circle. Jesus always had his inner three, his inner 12, whatever, but he had these broadening circles. And that's that way for every healthy person. You were mentioned before we got on there, you got this one guy, you can bear his heart, everything, right? But then you've got other guys that's like maybe 75%, and then some guys are 50%. I think we need those concentric circles. They just may not be in a building, right? And the way I'm wired, so I follow the 9 spiritual pathways model, where there's all different ways that we feel closest to God. And mine is off the charts outdoors. It's always the number one when I take the test. Mm-hmm. So my Bible study on Wednesday nights, we meet outdoors. We meet around a fire. We meet in a picnic pavilion. We meet around a pool, wherever. You meet at the lake, whatever. And we've always been that way. There's some winters where we get snow or whatever, where rain, cold rain in the spring, where we've got to go inside. But our cultural value is we study and talk about Jesus around a fire.
Yeah.
So different people would be different things. Maybe it's a book club. Maybe it's serving together. My wife is a very activist-based. Like, she feels close to God when she's making something right in the world that's wrong, and so it can be however we're wired to lean into that, because you're going to find other people chasing after Jesus in the same way.
I'll tell you, if you ever go to the backside of Keystone on Elk Run, you can see the Continental Divide for, it's got to be 100 miles both directions.
Oh, it feels forever huge up there.
It does, right? And I have posted a picture up there on a Sunday saying, this is my cathedral this morning. because God's...
Well, Jesus even said, or God the Father said to Isaiah, he said, could any of you make me a cathedral as nice as I make for myself? This, there are some gorgeous cathedrals in the world. I've been in Europe. I've been in South America. There are some incredible cathedrals. And it's our attempt, it's our Tower of Babel to try to recreate what Jesus has made. Go make a Yosemite. Go ahead. I'll watch.
Right. I could go down that path. I really do. I think God, especially when you know God, you see him in nature a lot more. Anyway, there's a lot more, by the way, Hurt and Healed by the Church. There's the book, Ryan George. It's available now wherever you get books, audiobook. You can get the digital, you can get the physical copy if you want. Anything you want to mention, cover that we haven't covered? I appreciate the conversation. I know there's a lot more to it, but I want to give you the last word.
And I would say most of my book is not about my pain. Mm-hmm. It's about what's been redeemed. And so if you just need to have hope at all, start with the last chapter. One of my dad's victims read the book early before it went to press. And she said her advice to everybody who reads it is read the last chapter first, see how the game ends, see how the story ends, and then go back and read the hard stuff. So if you do pick up the book, wherever books are sold, start with the hope at the end and then go back and see how I got there.
I love it. And you know what, Ryan, I appreciate most of all is you living out that hope, you being a physical example of that. So thank you, sir.
Thanks for saying that.
Absolutely. I appreciate all you guys out there watching. I'll be live all week this week, so we'll have some fun. If you know somebody that has maybe a similar experience to Ryan, hit that share button and say, hey, look, I want you to see an example of what God has done in someone's life and continues to do. It is a journey, people, by the way. Don't feel like you have to have everything worked out overnight. You don't. Just keep walking the journey. Keep pointing in the right direction. God's word will be a light to your feet, a lamp to your path, which, by the way, only gets you a few steps. That's why you got to have it every day. You know, going forward, it's not all at once. It's a process, but it's good. And so we want to encourage you in that process. So you can pick up Hurt and Healed by the Church, again, wherever you get books. You can check out explorience.org if you want to go on one of these great trips, guys. Get out with some other guys. And do check it out. I'll show you the website one more time. And we'll see you next time here on Life Today Live.